everybody. It's Acts of Pod, and we're podding from the quarantine, and not gonna let us stop pouring our hearts out and our souls out and getting information to you, who we love so thoroughly and deeply, that we would get this pod out to you. As always, I'm lead vocalist, dream maker, oat quaker, Gina. On bass, we have Anne.
Hello.
How are you doing, Anne?
I'm good. I'm really excited about talking tonight.
You are?
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah.
Are you focused? Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm totally ready. I promise. Okay. I promise. Now, I can't promise later on that I won't veer off into some weird note or thing that I read earlier, you know.
Sure. That's okay.
Okay.
And then on percussion and keyboards, or wherever we need her, as always, and sometimes haunted oboe, we have Cezanne.
Hello.
Cezanne, how are you doing?
I'm okay.
All right.
I am.
You are recovering from a massive nosebleed.
Yeah, blood started pouring out of my face not long ago.
And I mean, like, maybe like a couple of minutes ago.
Yeah.
All right.
But I would say less harrowing than day two of social distancing with my children.
Right. It's going to be rough. That's part of what we are planning to discuss in the pod, which is psychological effects of the quarantine. And yeah, that's going to be interesting. So on today's pod, I thought, you know, what we like to do here is talk about something that's happening in the news. And I think it'd be crazy to talk about anything other than the fact that there is a pandemic.
Yeah, it would feel a little strange.
Right. I mean,
trying to focus on anything else.
It seems to be at the forefront of all the news.
Yeah, I mean, it's like,
I don't know that I've heard any other news.
I mean, I guess we could talk about like album releases, but
yeah,
or you could talk about the fact that there's no toilet paper available. That seems more appropriate.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're in the midst of a. At the moment, it's sort of a mild quarantine, a diet quarantine, non-alcoholic quarantine. You know, just social distancing. It's cute.
Yeah, it's not even it's not quarantine, guys.
No.
You can still go outside. Just don't go near anybody else.
Right.
Right. No closer than 6 feet, right? Isn't that the...
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Y'all just made me think of something. I want to... I could so launch right into something right now, but it's too soon. It's too soon.
It's just okay. The intro. It's just the intro.
Okay.
So
too soon.
Okay.
But
launch into like a court case and blah. Okay, no.
Right, right.
Yeah. Not yet.
Yeah, yeah. And look, I love your beautiful mind, Anne, and we're going to get there, but it is just the intro.
Just ease on into it.
Right.
You know, it's like foreplay, Anne.
Yeah, no.
You can't just go charging.
You know
forward.
What I like to think? It's like we're just putting a toe in the hot tub, which is actually a terrible idea at the moment. Do not get in the hot tub right now. But we're just checking the temp. We're getting acclimated. That's where we're at.
Can you drink water from the hot tub, though, still?
Still? Still?
Only if you're a child. Children are apparently immune to this.
Wait a minute. Yeah, wait. Have you been drinking hot tub water for a while, Ian?
Yep. Just
oh, you to know this it. Day.
You know it.
Just nothing a steaming like cup of hot tub.
Only and no. Only from like interstate motels.
Nothing beats the flavor of hot tub water. Oh, that's why my immune system is so strong and I ain't afraid of the corona. Okay. God. So, all right. So we're going to put it in a bit of a historical context. And, you know, I like to keep it linear because I don't have ADD. I'm just kidding.
Hey, look, you know, I could give you some literature that talks about, like, the linear illusion.
Time is a flat circle. Look, we're experiencing time. Okay, you know what? What if in one of the parallel universes, everything's going backwards? Wouldn't you feel ridiculous?
Or just knowing skipping willy-nilly to points of interest. It's just a tangential universe.
Man, it would be so absurd what you consider your past as your future. So, I just thought if you, you know, are okay with this, I'll just give a tiny little, well, I'll start with a brief history of quarantines in general, if you're interested.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you interested, Cezanne?
You said history.
Yeah.
It's a magic word.
Yeah. Do your book report. I'm ready.
Are you ready? All right. So, I guess the first that was written about it, that's the other thing. You know what? We don't have to go. We don't have to go.
I won't say anything. You mean the written record of Western white people? Yeah. No. Okay. No, I saw right. where you were like, oh God. No. I won't.
This is what we know about, right? So, like, there, what happened in civilizations where we do not know about and how they dealt with disease outbreaks, we, like, of course, we don't know.
Well, we have no there idea. Might be, there might be even. Indigenous people alive today that know, but they don't want to share their history secrets with...
Well, you know, and there's a reason for that. And
we'll cover smallpox on another episode. Yeah,
right. That's the other thing that with pandemics and quarantine, it is the intersection of everything. You have like a class, race.
Ethnicity, age,
xenophobia, anxiety, paranoia, just everything. It's like things that you have not been dealing with, it all bubbles up to the surface, you know? So it's like, we had talked about that there's a certain giddiness because problems that we've had to deal with in our lives with, you know, healthcare or childcare and things that people didn't want to address or they would shush us. Now it's like, we're going to have to talk about it.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I think too, it's like that thing of where, you know, you're not supposed to be like, I told you so, but you want to just every person that's just been like, you know, sticking their fingers in their ears and like, la, yeah. la, la, everything's fine. You'd be like, look what happens when something goes wrong. Like, we have nothing to fall back on.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like when people, you know, have been sort of like living in the fringes and they've been sort of giving out this clarion call. And they've, like me, I've just been so exhausted because, you know, some people, they've only had like tangential, you know, experiences with the healthcare system. So they're like, yeah, that's terrible, but it doesn't really affect me. Whereas with me, it's a daily slog. Right. And I'm like, guys, you don't understand.
It's messed up.
Like, if this is tested, like, if this net is tested, it is going...
It's a real failure.
Like, it is a grift, and they are not... Like, the people who are working here, they do... The left hand does not know what the right hand is doing. Like...
Right.
We're in trouble. And it's like... Like I said, you know, people, they don't... Well, okay. The point being is that this is not the first time... People have felt this way. the first time, like in Western historical record anyway, was the plague of Justinian, which was not the bubonic plague, but it was like a cousin. You know, it was still transmitted through pest vermin. And what they did was they would close ports and not let outsiders, you know, it was... outsiders into cities.
Right.
And then they sort of developed, you know, at the time, like, it was weird because I was reading, like, academic papers and, you know, guys were, he was like, at the time, they didn't have, like, disease theory and they didn't understand, like, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, well, you don't need to understand that, like, this lady talked to that guy who died and she died and this lady didn't and she's alive. Like, that's all you need to know. Like, that, like, they understood that premise.
Yeah.
But, and then what, they did, which I just think because in Italy it was a port city, and that's why I think Italy again was really hard hit again, because it's always Italy because it's such a huge port city.
Yeah.
Is that they developed lazarettos. Is that not the coolest thing?
Lazarettos.
So, that were quarantine stations.
No, you just made me think about something. What I maybe think is the animal kingdom might be punishing us for being so horrendous.
Well, they keep giving us these diseases.
So, is your theory also that the bubonic plague was that the rats were punishing people?
Rats revenge. It should be called rats revenge.
No, because they weren't endangered.
Rats?
But, okay, but I just, again, I just want to confirm that at the moment you do believe that animals are punishing us.
Well, no, it's... No,
I mean, it would serve us right.
Well, we don't have to get into it right now. Well,
I do want to get into it.
Been talk about that the... We don't know yet, but that...
Who's we in?
The scientific community.
Collective we.
People who talk to animals in?
The general we.
The we as in scientific community.
Okay.
You count yourself a part of that?
Yeah. Well, when it comes to animal interests. like with, you know, the avian thing or the swine flu, like all that. And I know coronavirus, it's not a flu, but... There's some talk, and they're doing studies on the genome of the coronavirus to see that it may be related to another, like, animal hopping to human hopping kind of thing from either bats or pangolins, or maybe, like, went from bat to pangolin to humans. And pangolins are, like, one of the most endangered, critically endangered animals on the planet. And that's because they're slaughtered by just the hundreds of thousands.
Oh, wow. So it's the pangolin's revenge.
Right. And in fact, may I direct you to a New York Times article entitled Revenge of the Pangolins?
You can.
And everybody check it out.
If you think I wasn't overjoyed to see that pop up, and I clicked on that to read.
Finally getting the attention it deserves.
Pangolins, do it, man. You poor little guys. They're so nice.
But, yeah, so they, what would happen is that in the time of outbreaks or, well, in just anything, they would hold a ship's cargo for like 40 days in these lazarettos because they believed that was the, like, time period that any sort of disease would, like, die out. So people and that cargo.
That sounds reasonable, honestly.
Yeah, yeah.
Before any sort of, like, modern medical technology, like.
But, I mean, again, this is after several, you know, fevers and plagues that wiped out, like, what was it, 2/3 of the population at one point? So it's not unreasonable that people would want these safeguards in place, even if it were just for psychological reasons. But, I mean, but they also knew that it was, you know, a lot of times coming from, and, you know, what they were saying is that it also happened at these times where, you know, trading was expanding and the world was expanding. And that's where we're at now.
That's what I was saying.
Speak on it, Anne.
I'm saying you were, yes, that's exactly what was happening.
So, yeah, she affirms it. So, it, you know, historically.
I'm so excited that we're talking about that.
But it's essentially like the same song, different verse, is that historically, you know, every time there was an expansion of the world and we were, you know, trading more and, you know, goods and services were, we were just getting to know each other, getting to know each other's diseases.
Right. Yeah. I mean.
Mingling virulence.
Yeah.
The droplets.
And, yeah, so, and it's just kind of, there's a net positive and there's a little bit of a price to be paid as well, you know?
Yep.
I have a question. When you, the whole, like, the policy of, like, holding a cargo ship at port for 40 days or whatever, did that also include the people on the boat?
You know,
what I was thinking, that's kind of a pretty good amount of time to see if they were going to die. You know?
Well, yeah.
So they're like,
long enough
well,
to
we'll
see.
Know if they don't die by the end of the month, then they're probably okay.
Yeah, that's exactly what they did. And they also talked about, you know, when there was like a fever that went around and stuff like that, they would actually like post guards outside of cities and towns. Like it got to the point where, you know, any sort of traveler or visitor was just absolutely like, if you were stuck in between towns, like if you were like a traveling merchant or something like that, and there was a fever, like you were just out of luck.
Like,
you know?
Sorry, you can't come in. Well, it sounds like even though they had zero clue about the sort of biology of all of it, they still had a pretty good working theory about contagion and how that works.
Well, yeah. I mean, and that's the other...
Even if they thought it was, you know, something else.
Well, and that's the thing, because, like, even, like with cholera, too, it's like... it would... It just kills me because it's like... You know, if some of the things like, ooh... I wish she knew a little bit more about water.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like a little bit.
Yeah. Just a little more information will go a long way here.
You gotta heat it up and put chlorine in it. That's how you make it safe.
Like one tiny bit more of info.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, or even with like,
she knew more about water.
Or, you know, like with the plague, it's like, I just wish one person, like, that moldy cheese, I wish they would have been like, should I take a bite of this? Or, like, obviously, I don't know how antibiotics work, but, Like, I don't know what, like, but you know that story of, like, Louis Pasteur or something? Like, he got, like, his idea from moldy cheese. But I just wish that somebody was like, I'm gonna take a bite of this moldy cheese soup. But
I might be feeling a little sick, but I'm also so hungry.
Yeah, like, I don't know. I mean, I'll give it a shot. Like, what do I have to lose?
I mean, I won't die of starvation.
Yeah. Maybe this is oversimplification of the antibiotic process, but I doubt it. I feel like I'm head on that one. But yeah, so that's my but I wanted to start where I think your research begins, Anne.
Okay.
Which I got to read some of Anne's notes, which if I had to describe it in one word, I'd say aggressive.
I prefer the term passionate.
Passionate. Passionate.
Oh no, it's sure aggressive. It's good. It's good.
But yeah, so a good American precedent for outbreak pandemics is the Spanish flu, which I mean, I guess it's okay to call it the Spanish flu.
Right. I mean, and like people, that's what they called it. It has no necessarily relation to Spain. I mean, it's, you know,
tell me why they called it the Spanish flu?
Yeah, I didn't get that far.
It is
I would have thought.
I know. I had so many questions and there were all kinds of answers.
Well, I know it, if you're curious.
Tell me!
It's because, like, one of your very first symptoms is you can't get enough of tapas.
Ah, yes. The tapas.
And that's the thing. Like, they would go check on their neighbors, and it was so weird because even in, you know, early 20th century America, in Nebraska, there'd be tapas laid out. They're like, how did they even know about it?
Yeah. I do like some good boquerones.
It was the Midwest nice original manchego. Hot dish.
It was so weird. I mean, they were like, I didn't even know Elmer knew about tapas.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
And it was like it was shocking. Yeah.
Yeah.
And,
some gambas.
Yeah, and they were like, wait a second. How did she? I didn't even know she knew how to flamenco. And it was it was disturbing. It was beautiful and disturbing. Yeah. And
it was haunting.
Like, it was
hauntingly beautiful.
Right. And it was like the whole town was filled with this music. It was like the Gypsy Kings before the Gypsy Kings. And they were like, oh, it's the Spanish flu. And you just knew. It was like the piper's song leading you to your death.
Yeah. That sounds correct.
Right.
Oh, God.
That is absolutely. I'm going to publish that paper in the Journal of American Medicine. But what is actually true about the Spanish influenza is that it did not affect the older citizens because they believe a fever had gone through a generation previous that had inoculated them. Did you read that, Anne?
Yeah.
Because I read it in your notes.
Yeah.
Like something similar had gone through.
Right.
And they.
So, and that was in their younger generation, when they were in their younger generation, when they were younger. Yeah.
And so they were kind of inoculated against it. And so it ended up killing like the strongest of
it ended up killing the like men who survived World War I, which I mean, can you imagine like World War I
being taken out by the flu,
where it's like you were guaranteed to die basically, but then you make it back.
Warfare,
yeah. You make it back.
Yeah, you survive trench foot and
gas.
And you're just moving.
Yeah.
Yeah, like,
No, but I read that they would, that what really happened is they would go, this is the worst. They went into a house and this woman had given birth to twins.
Oh, yeah, I read that.
Yeah. And her husband was laying dead, and she's holding the babies, and there's nothing but an apple, like, laying within reaching distance.
Right.
And, you know, she's just holding the babies, and, like, it was awful.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Pretty grisly.
And, I mean, it's very... I think I don't know where I read it, but it had an impact on the generation, like in memory too, you know, because it was kind of scary. Well, there were similar kind of policies of like some cities would close, they were closing big events and schools and churches and theaters, you know, and like, okay, Tucson, Arizona, they had a thing where you couldn't go out in public without a mask. The mask thing that was still, that was from 100 years ago. That's still going on. And then, okay, yeah, that's where I'll stop on that.
Okay, so where did it start in the U.S.?
Well, I thought that it had didn't it start with soldiers?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean.
Oh, okay.
Because it was like people moving around all over and with the battles and then coming home and transmitting and, but, you know, honestly, I don't have that much of the history of like origin. Of it.
Yeah.
I looked into more about their approaches, like how the public healthcare system at the time responded, you know?
Well, right. Yeah. Go into that because I know that, that's kind of where we're headed now is like, how are we going to contain it?
Right.
Because it's, you know, what happens if one member of a family has it and the rest of the family doesn't, or, you know.
Well, I came across a good article about that, and it's from 2018, and it's basically saying, the title is Better Prepare Than React, Reordering Public Health Priorities 100 Years After the Spanish Flu Epidemic. And the article's talking about advocating that we need to stop being reactive, like, you know, and actually have these scientific forefront sort of addressing, like, pinpointing maybe where a disease could start or taking measures to be prepared if something were to happen.
Or having, you know, a way to have, you know, produce test kits and facilities to test them at.
Right.
Some sort of protocol for that.
Yeah. And so.
Right.
An illusion of progress, right? Like, so in 19. So we've come a long way since 1918.
Right.
Thank goodness we're not just. Thank goodness
things are so much better.
Thank goodness we're not just responding without any preparedness, you know. And at the time, there was a shortage of personnel. That sounds familiar to today,
right?
And they talk about the cycle of panic, neglect. You know, and that's why transformative measures like the response after the Ebola virus was so important to be at the forefront of like addressing it on a global level. Like, well, there's this weird cluster in this area of whatever country. Let's be proactive and study it and see and like start testing, you know, rather than just kind of be like, well, I'll just wait till I get on the cruise boat, you know?
Right. Well, you know, breaking your plans really sucks, so just cross your fingers and hope for the best.
Well, that's, like, the difference between the responses in, like, South Korea. where they're right. just testing everybody.
South Korea is like our only chance to have any kind of like solid data.
It's amazing what their response was like. And it's not like, oh, everybody's fine. No, of course they're dealing with it. But like the fact that 2 weeks after the first case of coronavirus there, government passed emergency approval for a lab in Korea to start getting out test kits. They're doing 10,000 test kits a week. And typically, a person's tested twice for accuracy.
Yeah.
And not only that, but they said you can be tested and treated. The government will cover both of those things. And not only that, but you can test regardless of your citizenship. And that's incredibly important.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Seriously.
And that's the thing that makes me nervous about something like that happening in this environment here is that, you know, if you're trying to contain an illness and people are worried about their citizenship status, which they absolutely should be, they're not going to go get tested if they have symptoms. So you're not going to be able to, like, do those kind of measures here.
I hadn't even thought of that angle. That's
well, and it's like this is a great example of the argument for people having access to healthcare, because regardless of whether they're illegal or not, there's a public health concern.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Well, it's not just so people can get.
What do you gain by not figuring out if helping somebody who's sick?
Well, and that's the thing that I feel, you know, illustrates like what does it mean to live in a society? Like, what are our shared values? Right. And it's like, we can't dance around it anymore.
Yeah.
You know, because what, and for some reason in this country, it's like this sort of individualism has gone to a point that, you know, it's like, well, if you made better choices, you would have healthcare. And if you made better choices, you wouldn't need food assistance. And if you, and the thing of it is that what you have to recognize is that we're all in this together.
Right.
Right. You're on the same cruise ship.
Yeah. That's now just looking for a port.
Yeah.
I was reading about a cruise ship that right now, like, they, it's a cruise line that came out of Italy and they went to Puerto Rico and a couple got tested because they were having symptoms, and they were first going to go to, oh my God, hold on. And this is, we're talking about a cruise that started out March 5th, which is
a 3-hour tour. Yeah.
Which is 9 days from where we're talking, when we're talking now. So 9 days ago, they set sail in the midst. From Italy, in the midst of all,
just a boat of merrymakers.
Yeah. You know, it honestly reminds me of, isn't it the Mask of the Red Death that Edgar Allan Poe?
Yeah.
Where it's like they're all partying, and then like he comes through like room by room. It's like all these, like, you know, like incredibly privileged people on this like doomed cruise ship, and they're getting like this like fancy foods, and you know.
They all still had the buffet. It was only like the buffet was open till like 2 days ago.
Yeah.
So,
awesome.
Sorry.
I mean, are they like,
catch a breath,
are they like chilling on water slides and stuff? I mean,
yeah, no, it's like the shows were canceled, but the gym, pool, and jacuzzi were open. And
yeah,
the
shows were canceled. Well, that's right. Nice.
But people are walking all around or whatever. But here's what's happening now. So they were first gonna go to the Canary Islands. Nope. Then Malaga, Spain.
Wait. Because the Canary Islands said no.
Is that why? Question I got.
Yeah, good. So everyone's just like, no, thank you. Thank you, Corona ship.
Yeah, and then Spain was like, we've suspended cruise ship arrivals.
Like, no. Did y'all not get the memo?
And the latest plan is to go to France, which today went into lockdown. So I'm just imagining this boat just like, you know.
Oh. Full of people who are just like, so like, I cannot believe this.
And they're just
right. I can't believe this.
And they've got the Corona patients and they set sail with no test kits, like nothing, you know, like.
Well, why would you want to have test kits on hand? That would just scare the people on the cruise, you know? It would make it seem like it was a possibility that there could be Corona on their ship.
It's like love at the time of cholera, but, you know, not romantic.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
Not. Can we just talk a little bit, too, about how... Okay, so there's definitely a certain sector who is like, you know what? I read this thing from this epidemiologist, and there's all this data, and it seems like, guys, it seems like we can do this. It seems like if we just practice some practical social distancing,
right?
You know, we could really, like, avoid the disaster that Italy is going through, where, you know, doctors are having to decide who gets the last ventilator and who gets to die.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We could maybe avoid that for ourselves. Mm-hmm. And then there's also like a really kind of shockingly large group of people who feel like somehow we're different than Italians or we're different than the Chinese completely. Yeah. And that if we just, why would you change your lifestyle?
We're Americans.
For something? But why would you for a second consider changing your lifestyle? For something, there's been how many deaths in the U.S.? Something like 11. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I saw that. I'm like, but...
What about other people?
Like, you can see where we're going to be in a week if you just look over here. That's how science works.
Yeah, yeah. Side note about one more cruise line thing. There, a leaked Norwegian cruise email that they had a talking point if customers called and the coronavirus came up, that they were to say that it only can survive in cold temperatures. So the Caribbean is a fantastic choice.
Yeah, that's what people kept saying. They're like, oh, don't worry. Once summer rolls around, this will all blow over. It's like, did you guys know that it's summer and the other half, the southern hemisphere? Of the globe right now.
Once again,
did y'all realize that?
Yeah.
Do you know how the planet works? No, you don't.
Why don't you talk?
So shut up.
Why don't you talk to Tom Hanks about it?
Jesus Christ! What the fuck? Oh, don't worry, it'll all blow over by summer. I'm still gonna make my plans for my trips. Yeah. It's like, okay, well, hold on to hope, but you know what? Don't be too upset when it doesn't work out.
Yeah, I mean, look, like, Tom Hanks is enjoying his summer with the coronavirus, like, obviously.
Yeah.
But what I wanted to get in is part of the reason we're not leading the charge, the U.S. is not leading the charge, is the very things that you have suggested would be helpful, Anne. We did have an agency that was organized in response to Ebola. Mm-hmm.
It was set up by Trump, right? Is that what? Because I know he's really proactive about this kind of stuff. He's really good at science.
Okay, it was under the National Security Council,
and it's the Global Health Security Agenda.
Yeah, so critics are pointing out that money might not be okay. The administration hadn't spent the past 2 years largely dismantling government units that were designed to protect against pandemics. The cuts started in 2018 as the White House focused on eliminating funding to Obama-era disease security programs. In March of that year, Rear Admiral Timothy Zimmer, whose job it was to lead the U.S. response in the event of a pandemic, abruptly left the administration and his global health security team was disbanded. That same year, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention was forced to slash its effort to prevent global disease outbreak by 80% as its funding for that program began to run out. The agency at the time opted to focus on 10 priority countries and scale back to in others, including China.
Yeah.
Okay. So cool, that's all cool, I
was. Because nothing happens in China.
Okay. The point being is that you had mentioned earlier is that the problem is, they slashed the budget mostly, and it had come up before in different pods, is that because programs where we worked with our allies, the belief was that we were spending too much money where Trump believed that other countries should be footing the bill.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it's like a penny of prevention is worth a pound worth of cure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it would have been really helpful
to keep this up if it had caught.
Right. Yeah, that seems like exactly the kind of information that, or exactly the kind of organization.
Right.
Like the team, sort of team effort. It could be like, let's set this into motion. Let's just get this machine running.
Mm-hmm.
So we know what's happening.
Yeah.
Right. Instead of what's happening right now, which is that we have no idea what's happening here.
Yeah.
Right. And
it's an embarrassment.
Right. And those very organizations would be the ones that we would rely on to organize testing, organize the data.
Right.
Supply test kits, organize personnel. And we don't have that because.
Yeah. And help actually disseminate accurate information. Mm-hmm. So that you don't have one group of people saying, hey, guys, wait, science. And then another group of people saying, you know what?
Yeah.
My school district keeps saying we're not going to close yet. So I'm going to go ahead and go on vacation. They haven't stopped my church services. So I'm pretty sure we're all okay.
Right. You know, that article you were talking about, Gina, I looked at the date, and it's 2 years to the date. That article was like March 13th, 2018, today's March 14th. And like in that article, there's one of the senators who was like, cut it. They're like, additional funding to the CDC doesn't seem in a time of scarce resources a wise use of resources. Well, there's a lot of money having to go out now.
Right. Yeah. Now we're facing economic disaster. So, yeah.
But, and it also, when, like, in times of, either like increased tension from either war or disease, it really has the effect of showing, the inadequacies,
mm-hmm.
You can see where all the gaps are.
It brings to the forefront, like crystal clear, like, we have a million beds for 300 million people. Hospital beds, I mean.
And that's the thing, because it's, when people talk about like the healthcare system or, having to pay for, a test for the coronavirus, and it's like, well, they're not having to pay for that in South Korea. And, you know, it's just right. like, why are we the only country that does this? And, you know, it just seems cruel. And why are people making money off of this? And,
yeah,
you know, it like,
well,
it,
and then, yeah, then there's a trend for everything to be like, well, let's wait until the last possible minute to say what's really going on.
Right.
Let's go ahead and say everything is fine up until the moment that we absolutely have to say that it's not.
Right.
Which is just so awful.
It's
like,
weird.
Why, how about right from the beginning, you tell everybody what's going on? Like, people are going to freak the fuck out anyway.
Well, and also,
why don't you let them make, like, start to wrap their heads around it and make the right choices? And why do you wait until, you know, things have already crossed the tipping point before you decide that you're going to give people free tests?
Right.
Why do you wait until past the tipping point? Like, why? Like,
is it also
don't like it?
It looks like a sign of weakness. Like, but you know, we can do this.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. Like, there's this whole, like bluster that we've been talking yeah. about. It's like, yeah, we're going to keep shaking those hands. I will not take responsibility for anything. I will not be taking a test. No. Uh-uh. Not me. I don't have any symptoms. Like, really?
Well, and the closest, I mean, a lot of people on Twitter had made this association, and I thought about it too, is that when the docuseries Chernobyl, but I mean, just like the relationship between, you know, people in the, like, under the Soviet Union, where they just didn't believe anything the state was telling them.
Right.
Because they knew that they would say anything that made the people in power look good.
Right.
So, like, when something like Chernobyl happened, they were like, right, but what's really going on?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
That's yeah. totally going on here. I mean, I think to the other degree where, you know, I think, you know, where I live right now, there's only a couple of confirmed cases, but a lot of people that I know are treating it as though, like, oh, we need to we're hunkering down. And that's because a lot of people are like, we have no idea. Like,
right.
I can't trust what anybody is saying about this, because right. the trend is everything is fine until it's not. And so everyone's yeah. like, this is crazy. We don't know where the infection vectors are heading. We don't
there's
know
no
where it is.
There's no testing.
There's no testing. Anyway. It's like, people keep saying there's no cases. It's like, yes, there are. There's not no cases. There's no testing. Like,
yeah.
there were a handful of tests coming out of this city, like, maybe last week. And only yesterday did they start testing in earnest. And not even to the scale that they should be. So, of course, yeah, people are going to avoid things even if they actually shouldn't. Like, and that is actually what's taking down the economy right now, where, yeah, maybe you could still go out to eat if you practice these, if you did these, like, sort of precautions, but no, people aren't going to do that because
right.
they have no idea whether they're going to be,
and God,
you know, somebody that catches it and accidentally gives it to their grandmother.
Right.
You know?
Well, that's the thing, because, like, in my household, we're both, I live with a much older roommate, and, but we are both incredibly vulnerable.
Yeah.
Right.
So, and the thing yeah. is that I really need to know the truth.
Because, yeah, please.
Like this is...
Like, could you set aside at least a test kit for somebody like me, please?
Because, like, no, your press conference is great, but is there a place I can go where I can actually know what's happening? No, there's not.
Well, no, but Google's working on it.
No, but, like, the thing of it is that, like, in my household, like, we might not survive it. So, like,
right.
like, I need to know, like, just, like, please let us know, like, let us know. It,
yeah.
Like, it's not cute.
Right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, not brave. It's not brave to be reckless. It's not like, you know, that's not cool. Viruses don't care how chill you are about them at all.
Yeah.
Oh, I just, you know, like, I like to do this in every pod, which is just read a block of text.
do it.
So these are, and I just want, you know, because I want you to know this, guys, because I feel like there's comfort in information and data. This is psychological effects of quarantine. So, first, the measure has significant signal value, indicating that authorities believe the situation to be severe and liable to worsen. Second, the imposition of the measure primarily for the benefit of others outside of the affected cities reduces trust and reassurance for those within the cordon. The belief that authorities are acting in my best interests. Third, quarantine is by definition associated with perceived loss of control and a sense of being trapped, which will be heightened if families have become separated. Fourth, the impact of the rumor mill must not be underestimated.
Yeah.
The desire for facts will escalate, and an absence of clear messages will increase fear and push people back to seek information from less reliable sources. For some, the cumulative effect of these impacts may be severe.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Just look out for it. Know that it's a natural progression. It's okay. And we're all
the things you're feeling are normal.
Right.
Yeah.
We're all a little nervous. We're all looking for information, and we deserve information. We're not getting it.
Yeah. But we do know what works because, you know, from actually a long time ago.
Yeah.
You know, back in the days of the Spanish flu, we could see the difference between what happened in Philadelphia versus what happened in, I can't remember that other city now.
Oh, God.
That other city that took measures, and Philadelphia that didn't take social distancing measures.
That's right. Yeah, that, you know, you could hear the haunted flamenco music and Elmer making his tapas.
We know it works, so maybe just don't go on your spring break vacation, even though you really, 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 really want to and you feel like you deserve it because you're special.
I would love to go on a vacation. Oh, that reminds me. That's another thing I was thinking about. I was looking at a slideshow of, like, empty places, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like the Colosseum and a Beijing airport or whatever. And I,
oh, wow, yeah.
And it was actually, it was so calming. I was like,
yeah.
It was just like, yeah, there's the Colosseum. It wasn't just like, and they would show, and then they show, you know, from where, before all this, where it's, you know, all the tourists and this and that. And now, you know, and I started thinking about Machu Picchu and like world historic sites where they're being like destroyed because so many people go there. Like the Galapagos Islands. Like, you know what? Just stay, maybe let's just give them a break for just a little bit, you know?
Well, I mean, pollution is, I mean, if we're doing silver linings at this point, pollution is being reduced to a certain extent during this period.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. Little self reflection and meditation and interpersonal.
There is something like weirdly it's like, yeah, I guess there's a lot of emotions to deal with right now.
A lot of emotions.
maybe I'm vacillating between like this weird giddiness and this dread and this like calm of just knowing that you can't really do anything about it and everything is out of your control and you're a speck of dust.
It's the loss of control, I think, that but it, you know, and to yeah. watch other people have to surrender their right. loss of control.
It's like we've been we've been preparing for this for so long of like, because I always feel like, what is happening? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And like, and it's like, yeah, I was right. Nobody knows what's going on. Like,
yeah, it does leave things on like a more positive note. My most sincere hope is that this will allow people to really understand like that we need that sort of New Deal reformation, you know, that we need to sort of that we are on this doomed cruise ship together.
Yeah. Like you're literally stuck on this cruise ship.
You're eating from we're using the same tongs.
We're all eating the same shrimp cocktail.
Right. I mean, like that sneeze guard is inadequate.
That's a psychological sneeze guard right there. That's just for your mind to feel better about things.
I mean,
that's there for looks.
Have you ever been to a buffet where you didn't see someone do something gross? Like even a kid. Like just...
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, the toilet paper is going to run out, guys. Like...
Yeah.
Like, but I'm...
And the bidets, by the way.
So, you know, but, you know, we're all in this together. And I think that, you know, if we can use this moment, and I know this is going to sound corny, but I honestly believe more of us want to do something positive, you know, like rebuild a safety net, you know, and make sure that people do have access to healthcare, because when they don't, like in a pandemic, if people don't have access to healthcare, like, you're going to get sick.
Right. Because like,
somebody you love is going to get sick.
Yeah. You're not the first person to touch that toilet paper roll at the store. There's been
people. You know what is happening right now?
Yeah. What?
You know what's happening right now? People cannot visit their elderly, like, loved ones in nursing homes right now. Right. Nursing homes are being shut down. Like, you can't go visit them unless they're dying. Yeah. That's a fucking tragedy. Like, this is, like, not a small thing. And it sucks that it takes something like this to, I mean, hopefully expose the gaps and hopefully, like, drive the point into people that it's not just about whether you're okay and it's worth it to, you know, like, a little bit of prevention.
Yeah.
Or any kind of forethought or evidence-based like policy.
Right.
I hope that that's what happens, but
we honestly we need to invest more in caretakers, in people who are in support, like those people that you know, like in Seattle when there was only 3 people who showed up in a nursing home for hundreds of patients, like, their salaries are abysmal. They're like the stretch to the limit. I mean, they're like, we just need to have a conversation about people who are compensated for taking care of our most vulnerable population. Like, we need to invest in our children and in the elderly. It's absolutely possible. It's what we're looking at now is like all of a sudden they're coming up for, you know, all these businesses that out of nowhere people can work from home. And it's like, but you couldn't accommodate my disability.
Right.
But now you can.
But now you can.
Suddenly everybody can work from home.
Right.
Well, honestly, that's another good thing that's going to come out of this is that we're going to figure out that this culture of like, driving 50 miles to work to go get on a computer to do your job is fucking ridiculous. And we can change the world that way as well.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, like, you know, Seattle's mayor has stopped evictions right yeah. now.
Right.
Because it's like, well, we're we can't have you on yeah. the street. It's like.
Yeah, they're stopping cutoff service for utilities.
AT&T is waiving, charging data overage for people okay, yeah. for the internet.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the thing. It's like, you know, all these things that didn't seem possible before are possible now all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, I think yeah. like these big structural changes that everybody said were impossible.
Right.
Maybe we should demand them because they are possible.
Right. Like, oh, yeah. so you do know that there's some inequality going on.
Well, and that's the other thing, because then, you know, we can make things like childcare possible, you know, because yeah. if you can tell, you know, like you like work remotely and. So yeah. it's like this is going to have to be the start of a real big conversation. So it's like, I just feel like we all need to just stay passionate about it.
Yeah.
That's like what I hope to take away from it.
Speaking of passion, this is what I was saving to tell y'all about.
Ooh.
Oh, yes.
I am. Called eBay this morning.
Oh no.
Oh yeah. Was yes. Yes.
I called
an actual phone call happened.
I did.
eBay.
Oh, because my God.
I wanted to report the price gouging yes. of
yeah.
Lysol for $50. And
wow. yeah.
and it came out in the news that eBay said, you know, that they are also actively taking this down because it violates uh-huh. their disaster and tragedy policy. Wow. And I got on the phone with a lovely representative because I wanted to know and which drop down menu was most appropriate, because I couldn't find a disaster and tragedy.
How do I report this?
Yeah. Well, because disaster and tragedy policy wasn't explicitly a choice. So I was like, uh-huh. I want to know what is the best match to report these items. And we both agreed, go to listing practices. Yes. And practices. Yeah.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
That's it. That's good to know, Anne.
Go out there, army of listeners, and start reporting price gouging.
But I mean, yeah, I was just like,
under,
you know.
All right, that's what I'm saying. Keep that fire. Keep you know, that yeah. fire.
You just pick up the phone and you talk to eBay.
You know what? You do that. You take some time out of your day and you get on the line. Did you have to wait?
Yeah, well, I had to go. It was like all these automated stuff and I just kept confusing the system. And they're like,
yeah, so yeah, yeah,
they
yeah.
ever got me to a person.
And I can't imagine that you're good at confusing the system. Well,
because they're like, what do you need? And I'm like, report disaster policy violation.
Price gouging.
I did. That's the other thing I said. I go, price gouging.
Wow. Wow.
Oh, I love
That's
it.
That's good. That's good.
Good job, Anne. Good on you, citizen.
I mean.
Wow.
I just want to fight.
No. And I
just want to fight with somebody.
Well, not that rep, but like, I just.
No, of course not. That's not what we're talking about.
You know what I mean.
It was the man. Let's mm-hmm. be clear. Mm-hmm. It was the man.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's a great, again, I think that's a great ending point because, you know, we want to continue. Don't stop fighting for what's right.
Right.
No.
Passion.
And we just, again, we want to, you know, and if you're social distancing and you feel alone, just know we're here for you. And
come on, we're here.
You can get in touch with us We would be happy to hear from you. We will talk to you. We love you.
Yeah.
You can get in touch with us on actsofpod at Gmail, actsofpod at Instagram, actsofpod, your mother's house.
That's my favorite one. That's
my favorite.
And I hope she is socially distancing herself because she is vulnerable.
Actually, this week we won't be going to your mother's house.
We will because
we're going to be very respectful of your mother.
Right. But
might stay away for a couple of months.
Yeah, but we will get back to your mother's house. Axopod at Facebook. All right. Stay safe. Don't be weird about toilet paper.
Yeah.
It's really weird.
Take what you need. Yeah. Just take what you need.
And we love you.
Yep.
Love you too. We really do.
All right.
Wash your hands.
Wash your hands.
All right.
I'm just a little I'm just a little chimney sweep.
Oh, no. She's not. She's never been in a chimney.
And even I wash my hands. Wash my hands. Goodbye now.
Stop being. We'll be right back.